From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a challenging conversation with former Secretary of Homeland Security under Barack Obama, Jay Johnson.
We're in the middle of a crisis on our southern border. The unprecedented surge of illegal migrants from Central America.
Since the beginning of the Trump administration, the U.S.-Mexico border and immigration policy have been front and center of the public conversation.
We have an invasion of drugs, invasion of gangs, invasion of people, and it's unacceptable.
But a humanitarian crisis at the border and the fierce debate over the appropriate government response is nothing new. Jay Johnson was the Secretary of Homeland Security during President Obama's second term, from late 2013 through 2017, when tens of thousands of unaccompanied migrant children and families were arriving at the border asking for asylum.
We're here to update you on the steps we are taking to address the surge in unaccompanied children along our nation's southwest border.
As Secretary of Homeland Security, Johnson expanded the detention of women and children seeking asylum by putting them into family detention facilities. This expansion of family detention would become one of the most controversial policies of the Obama administration.
Secretary Jay Johnson toured a temporary detention facility where currently 400 women and their children are. Anna was there.
Well, really, he wants to send a message primarily to these immigrants and to the countries from which they are coming that if you come here, you will be detained and you will be deported.
Jay Johnson was criticized for what many saw as an overly punitive response to a humanitarian crisis.
Obama had ordered Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson to look into ways he could take executive action to scale back deportations after civil rights groups dubbed him the deporter-in-chief.
At the time, Jay Johnson said that he expected family detention to be a deterrent for families considering migrating to the U.S.
And I agree with you, Congressman, that we have to put in place, and I think we're doing this, a number of deterrent factors. Increased housing to detain parents, adults who come to this country with their children, expedited removals.
Many have questioned the effectiveness of these deterrents in light of the ongoing crisis at the border. Immigration is, of course, an issue that we've been covering here at Latino USA for decades. So we had some pretty tough questions for the former secretary.
You have no second guesses?
Well, are there things that we could have done differently? Now that I'm a lot smarter sitting here in Midtown Manhattan, yes, of course.
Like
but,
what?
You know, I shouldn't have said that because I knew you were going to follow up. Good question.
In our conversation, we talk about his legacy and how his policies may have had an impact in current immigration enforcement under Trump. Secretary Johnson, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to our discussion.
Really?
Absolutely. I love public radio. I even guest DJ once a year for WBGO Newark.
So the thing that people didn't know about former Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security is that you are a huge jazz and R&B aficionado.
Well, people who listen to that station know.
That actually leads me to my first question because, you know, getting access to the head of the Department of Homeland Security is not an easy task. And so why are you being so open and accessible?
I'm going to tell you a little secret. If you had approached me under the same circumstances 3 years before, I would have given you the same response. But over the last 26 months since leaving office, I have tried to speak out where I think it is appropriate, where I have something to offer, particularly around some of the issues that I know we're going to discuss, because there seems to be so few people who are willing to try to talk common sense around issues that are heavily politicized and heavily emotional. Everyone seems to have gone to their extreme corners in a lot of our public debate now. And so I've tried to be a moderate voice who's had to assess some of these problems from all sides.
So Jay Johnson is a Black kid who grows up in New York City. And I was like, I want to know a little bit more about that kid.
Well, I was born September 11th, 1957.
No, you're kidding.
So 9/11/01 was my 44th birthday. I was born here in New York, lived for the first 6 years in Corona, Queens. Louis Armstrong lived around the block. It was in the 50s, 60s, really an enclave for African Americans who had left Manhattan, who had left uptown. When I was six, we moved upstate to Poughkeepsie, New York, in the Hudson Valley. And coincidentally, when I was in my 30s, 1994, I ended up marrying the girl next door who grew up next door to me in Poughkeepsie, New York.
You go to Morehouse? Tell me a little
Morehouse
bit about
College.
Why was it important for you to go to Morehouse?
Interesting question. It was probably one of the most important turning points of my life. As a black kid growing up in a principally white community, I had very few role models. And I was a C&D student all through high school. And when I went to Morehouse, it was one of the few times in my life when I said to myself, this feels immediately right to me. I feel very much at home on the campus of Morehouse College. So by sophomore year, I was a B student. And junior, senior year, I was a straight A student. And I was inspired entirely by my experience at Morehouse College.
So you become assistant United States attorney in the Southern District of New York. You then get involved with the Clinton administration. Then start working with the Obama administration as general counsel of the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously you were not surprised when you end up being named the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security.
Well, but, I was surprised. I was stunned.
What was your reaction at that point?
Well, I'll give you a little bit of detail. I had left government and I was on business in Hong Kong, and I received a phone call from the Chief of Staff, Dennis McDonough, who said, Jay, the President would like you to be our next Secretary of Homeland Security. And I was really surprised. And I said, Dennis, really? Am I qualified for that job? And, you know, he gave the obvious answer. Well, yeah, the president thinks you are. Isn't that enough? I served as Secretary of Homeland Security for 1,124 days.
And not one more.
And not one more.
So when you take over for Janet Napolitano, the outgoing Secretary of Homeland Security, you were taking over a department that had a record number of people who were being deported, double the number of people being prosecuted for reentry, over 200,000 people in federal prison just for crossing the border. So you were walking into a real conundrum of problems in terms of immigration. So what did you, as the head of the Department of Homeland Security, what did you want to do? What was your sense of like, well, this is my mission in terms of immigration?
On immigration, early 2014, there was a confluence of what I would say were three events. One, we were working with the Congress to try to get comprehensive immigration reform passed. Second, we had the spike in migration from Central America in early 2014, spring 2014, early summer 2014. Third, as you will recall, President Obama was being heavily criticized for being the so-called deporter in chief. Because of the numbers of deportations. And that, I know that that hurt him, that stung him. And I recall a meeting in March 2014 with a group of people who were, it was an intense discussion.
And what was the president saying? You say he was stung by being called the deporter-in-chief.
He had recited all of the things that we were trying to do to achieve comprehensive immigration reform, that he had begun DACA in 2012, and we wanted to see path to citizenship codified into law. But nevertheless, we walked away from the meeting with a direction to me to make our system of immigration enforcement more humane.
So let's talk about 2014. When did you become aware of the fact that children without their parents were coming to the United States?
Mother's Day, May 11, 2014. I'd been hearing reports of unaccompanied kids entering our country. I had been watching the numbers rise in the course of my first few months in office. And in May 2014, I was told it has reached crisis proportions. And we went to McAllen, we went to the Border Patrol holding station there, and it was flooded. And my first reaction, frankly, was a humanitarian reaction. And I'll never forget this one little girl. She was probably 8, 9 years old, sitting at the desk being processed by a Border Patrol agent. She was all by herself. And through a translator, I asked her, "Where's your mother? It's Mother's Day. Where's your mother?" And she said, "I am trying to find my mother here in the United States. I left, I think she said Guatemala or Honduras, to find my mother here in the United States." And when she said that, I started to cry. The translator started to cry, and the little girl started to cry. And that was, for me, a transformational moment.
Coming up on Latino USA, we continue talking about the crisis at the border, family separation, and our conversation gets tense. Secretary Johnson, have you ever thought about apologizing for your role in kind of creating the immigration detention problem, situation, crisis that we have now?
No.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from HBO, presenting the new comedy series Los Espookies. Executive produced by Lorne Michaels of Saturday Night Live and Fred Armisen, Los Espookies is a primarily Spanish-language series that follows a group of friends who turn their love for horror into a peculiar business, providing horror for those who need it. Starring Julio Torres, Ana Fábrega, and Fred Armisen, catch Los Espookies, premiering Friday, June 14th at 11 p.m. on HBO. Support also comes from Babbel. Have you always wanted to speak a new language? Whether it's for travel, work, or brain training, Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons will get you speaking confidently in your new language. Choose from Spanish, French, and more. You'll learn through real-life dialogues, speech recognition, and interactive trainers. And Babbel's spaced repetition method actually makes you remember what you've learned. Download the app or go to Babbel, Babbel.com, to try Babbel for free.
There are so many different labels on food these days. Organic, non-GMO, fair trade, cage-free, hand-gathered. It's overwhelming.
I sometimes jokingly refer to it as the NASCARing of our food.
Life Kit has a new episode, Making Sense of Food Labels. Find it and more by searching Life Kit All Guides in Apple Podcasts.
Hey, we're back, and we're talking today with former Secretary of Homeland Security under President Barack Obama, Jay Johnson. In 2012, the number of unaccompanied minors arriving at the southern border started to grow. But in 2014, the Obama administration was unprepared for a sudden increase in these arrivals.
Our message absolutely is don't send your children unaccompanied on trains or through a bunch of smugglers. We don't even know how many of these kids don't make it.
More than 68,000 minors were apprehended between 2013 and 2014. In this second part of our interview with Jay Johnson, we talk about the way his administration responded to the crisis. We also talk about his department's policies on deporting undocumented immigrants. Obama's promise was to focus on criminals. But data from ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, shows these deportations targeted immigrants whose only crime was illegal entry into the United States, or cases of fraud, including possessing false immigration documents. We're going to pick up the conversation now. So, with this influx of families and children coming without their parents over the border, you know, you say that your approach was humanitarian. You, in fact, decide to expand family detention. Before 2014, there was only one detention facility that housed families. That was Berks in Pennsylvania. You open up three other detention facilities that are aimed at holding families. So why did you decide to do that, and how do you look back on that decision now?
So our response to any situation like this has to have a humanitarian component to it. We should hope to treat others as we would want to be treated ourselves. The other aspect of that is we have sovereign borders. Our borders are not open. There are laws to enforce. When you have Border Patrol infrastructure built to accommodate a population of X, and it ends up being X times four, the conditions are not going to be optimal. I was surprised to find out that in 2014, we had immigration beds for 34,000 people, only 95 of which were equipped for family units. This was a new demographic, a new phenomenon, because for a very, very long time, the prototypical migrant on the southern border was a single adult from Mexico, usually a male. And the demographic had totally changed. And so we simply could not have a system of catch and release. Some people listening to this may not welcome that information.
I think many people might not like that term, but, you know, because
we cannot have a system of catch and release.
Right. People say, well, they're not animals.
You just can't have a system of catch and release. The message then goes out that, you know, essentially our borders are open. Family detention was not popular in a lot of quarters. I was acutely aware of that and always asking our people, hey, are we doing this the right way? Is there an alternative?
Can you tell me where in you understand the humaneness that you wanted to achieve in your policy? How you were perceiving that holding families who had essentially were not criminals in any way, shape, or form crossing a border, how that reflects the humanity that you wanted to achieve in the policy?
Well, with some exceptions, fundamentally, people, migrants, desperate for a better life coming from Central America they're not criminals.
So then why hold them?
They're people desperate because we don't have open borders. We don't have catch and release.
So you said that the idea of family detention should be seen, in fact, as a deterrent for other mothers and children to not cross the border. Do you think, though, that in fact it ended up paving the way for what became Trump's zero tolerance policy? Families cannot be held.
No, I would disagree with that. That was the Trump administration's own idea, independent of anything we did. The principal reason for expanding our detention capability is simply because the numbers were rising, and we had to have some idea of who was entering our country, and there were some people who were appropriate to be detained. Did that serve as a deterrent? I think the answer in retrospect is definitely yes. Now, the Trump administration decided to go down this road of a zero tolerance policy that they were never going to be able to fulfill, because you simply don't have the infrastructure or the detention space to hold all these people.
So, Jay Johnson, citizen, what do you think is the intention behind Donald Trump's zero tolerance policy in terms of immigrants and immigration and
children?
Well,
you'd have to ask Donald Trump, Jeff Sessions, and John Kelly.
No, but you as a citizen, as you're kind of looking at this, having been on the inside.
Okay, so it's a very good discussion. Having owned this problem for 3 years, I know a couple of lessons. One, real and perceived changes in enforcement policy have the effect of causing downturns in illegal immigration. But, and here's the big but, Maria, but so long as the underlying conditions, the underlying push factors in Central America persist, the overall pattern is always going to revert back.
So, Secretary, I don't know. I mean, when I think about my experience of covering immigration and meeting Central American migrants, you know, most people really do not want to leave. And I have yet to find any migrant who is telling me, oh, I was checking my phone to find out what the policy was in the United States in order to determine when I was going to leave. Usually, it's an extraordinary crisis that lends someone to make this kind of a decision.
Yes.
So the notion of we couldn't appear to be open borders if we registered people who were coming in and then said, okay, well, we want you to come back and show up. I mean, I just find it very interesting. You know that actually immigrants appear to their court cases overwhelmingly. So I don't understand why, if you wanted to have a humanitarian response, that you didn't, in fact, take the political blowback and just say, these are human beings. They are not coming to overrun the country. We're going to process them and we're going to release them because we understand that they pose no threat. But well, your administration didn't do that.
Here's the reality. Everyone wants a black or white answer, either detain everyone or detain no one. It's not that simple. And people are very mindful of, because the coyotes, the smugglers, will publicize this and encourage this. What will happen when I get here? Will I be detained? Will I be released? And so if we were to say, if we were to declare publicly, if you come here, you will be arrested, processed, and then released. And that's the policy of the United States. You're just encouraging more illegal migration.
I mean, now, really?
A lot of people. Yes, really.
Secretary?
Yes, absolutely. I know people don't want to hear that, Maria. But
well, it's not that.
That is, in fact, the case. Migrants are very sensitive to our enforcement policies and perceived changes in it.
I guess that's
pay
the difference.
To that.
I just think that most migrants are, it's a very complicated situation. And in fact, recently I was on the border. We were in Brownsville, we were in McAllen, and then we crossed over into Matamoros and spoke with some of the people who were waiting to cross over. Let's just take a listen to this.
Why did you leave Honduras?
Mire, yo dejé Honduras y me vine por la razón que a mi hija me la violaron. Hey. Me quemaron mi casa. Nosotros tenemos tiempo de andar en la calle.
He told me that he left Honduras because his daughter had been raped, that his house had been burned down, and that they were now living on the street, and that he never thought he would be in this situation with people treating him poorly just because he was a desperate migrant. And then he was holding back his tears and he said to me, we came in search of protection. And then he said, to the U.S. government, if you hear this, have mercy. We didn't come because we wanted to come.
Que algún día yo le decía al gobierno americano, pues me llega a oír que por favor tenga piedad de nosotros porque yo no me he venido porque yo me he querido venir.
So that kind of falls in the face of what you're saying, which is that—
I've had that conversation with hundreds of migrants on the border after they're apprehended. I always ask, why did you come here? I always want to hear their stories. And first and foremost, the reason people leave Central America are the conditions that we just heard. No one's questioning that. It's a powerful reason why people flee, and many people qualify for asylum, but a lot don't.
Secretary, what is it like when you hear the criticism that actually the Obama administration, the country's first black president, actually laid the seeds in terms of what people call the immigration, detention, deportation, mass industrial complex? That, yes, it didn't start under Obama. It didn't start under George W. It started under Bill Clinton, actually, with the 1996 laws.
Mm-hmm.
But that what the Obama administration did was actually to put down the railings for the trains of the deportation machinery to start running.
Well, the high for illegal migration on our southern border was the year 2000. 19 years ago, and it is now a fraction of what it used to be. The year 2000 was when Bill Clinton was president. It's now a fraction of what it used to be, although today as we speak, it's becoming an increasingly large fraction, the highest we've seen in 12 years. Do I have any second guesses or about the investments that our government has made over the last 19 years in security on our southern border? No, I do not.
You have no second guesses?
Well, no. Do I regret that we've made the investments we've made? No. Are there things that we could have done differently? Now that I'm a lot smarter sitting here in Midtown Manhattan? Yes, of course.
But like what? Well, like when you sit and you say regrets.
Well, there are always, you know, I shouldn't have said that because you knew you're going to follow up. Good question.
Well, it means what it means to me, Secretary, is that when you're alone in your Midtown office or, you know, whatever, that you are, in fact, sitting here saying, whoa, what happened here?
No, it's not quite that way, Maria. No, it's, are there things that I would do differently with the benefit of hindsight when it comes to our immigration mission, our cybersecurity mission, our counterterrorism mission? With the benefit of hindsight, yes, of course. But we're always smarter in retrospect. I hope this administration learns some lessons from its own experiences, because it clearly has not learned many lessons from history, from prior administrations.
So seeing how President Trump has enacted his immigration policies, essentially making it the centerpiece of his campaign, now his reelection campaign, do you think that things would be different today if the Obama administration, in fact, had passed immigration reform?
We came very close in the House to passing comprehensive immigration reform, and it did not happen. So by fall of 2014, at the direction of the president, we launched a series of executive actions to do the best we could to reform our immigration system, which included a DACA-like program for parents of U.S. citizens, lawful permanent residents who had been in this country a number of years. One of the other executive actions we launched, which I'm proud of, is we asked our immigration enforcement personnel to focus more sharply on the criminals, and they did.
You will admit, though, that many of the criminals who are considered criminals are people who have just committed fraud.
Well, the priorities in the policy we released in November 2014 focused most sharply on convicted felons, not people who commit a crime simply by crossing the border illegally.
But fraud would be one of those crimes.
Fraud,
of criminals.
Robbery,
but basically
gang activity,
every
and so
single
forth.
Undocumented immigrant in the United States of America has committed fraud. That would make every single one of them deportable.
No, that's not the way we looked at it. That would be wrong. No, that would not be the way we looked at it. That's not the way I told our enforcement personnel to carry out the priorities.
So, you know, I'm a professor of Latino studies. Well, I'm a Mexican immigrant. I have 16 jobs. So one of them mm-hmm. is I'm also a professor. And one of the
God
things.
God bless you.
Thank you. One of the things that I hear from my students, many of them are first generation, children of immigrants, and they would raise this question. They would say, it hurts us particularly deeply that we have a black president and a black man who is running the Department of Homeland Security, and that it is under them that we feel that we are being most targeted as immigrants. Of course, immigrants are of every single race. But what do you say to the people who say, and it's tough, right? It's not a pretty question. It's not something that I even like asking. But they're saying, these are black men who have an experience of being denied their role, their visibility, their power in the United States. And they're the ones who are doing this?
Whoever occupies the office of President of the United States or the Office of Secretary of Homeland Security, whether you're black, you're white, Latino, or of any other race, religion, or national origin, has a responsibility to enforce the laws as they exist. That was something that President Obama and I took very seriously. There are solutions to this problem, Maria. There are solutions that are obtainable, and they're not easy fixes. And they're politically difficult. They're politically controversial. One of which is we have to continue what we started in the last administration of investing in eradicating the poverty and violence in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. It can be done. Will it happen in a week, in a month, in a year, or even in the life of one administration? Probably not. But we have to keep at investing in eradicating the poverty and violence in those countries. The push factors always overwhelm any level of border security or immigration enforcement you can put on the problem on our southern border.
Secretary Johnson, have you ever thought about apologizing for your role in kind of creating the immigration detention problem, situation, crisis that we have now?
No. Are these issues controversial? Yes. Are people unhappy with the way in which laws are enforced, policies are administered? Yes, on both sides, without a doubt. These were extraordinarily difficult issues. I handled them, President Obama handled them, as best we could with what we had to work with.
What would be the one thing that you're like, the thing that kind of keeps you up at night? What worries you now?
What worries me now is that this administration seems unwilling or unable to learn from the experiences of the past. One of the things I did when I was in office during that summer of 2014, during the spike, was call in my Republican predecessor, Mike Chertoff, and asked him, listen, how did you deal with this when you were in office? And I learned a lot from him. This administration doesn't seem to be interested in doing that.
Secretary Jay Johnson, thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA.
Okay.
Jay Johnson served as Secretary of Homeland Security from 2013 to 2017 under President Barack Obama. The Trump administration, far from focusing on the push factors behind mass migration from Central America, has signaled at cutting aid to those countries entirely. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo recently declared that we have ceased allocating new funds to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. This episode was produced by Miguel Macias and Maggie Freeling and edited by Fernanda Camarena and Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Sofia Palizacá, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo. Our engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholt. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Jess Alvarenga. Our interns are Lucas Southard and Jonathan Cabral. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The Ford Foundation. Working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
Secretary Johnson. Here we go. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, a young activist from Texas and her mission to provide reproductive health care to asylum seekers on the border. That's next time on Latino USA.